You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We're going to talk hymns today.
So excited.
Time to get out the hymn nerd stickers.
Yes.
And talk about hymns today. I'm very excited about that. Thanks to Concordia University Wisconsin for supporting The Coffee Hour. You can find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin at cuw.edu.
Live uncommon.
Our friend from across the river, both theologically and geographically, I think, the Reverend Kevin Twitt, campus minister for Reformed University Fellowship at Belmont University and founder of Indelible Grace Music. Pastor Twitt, welcome back.
So glad to be here again.
It's been a hot minute since we've talked about hymns with our friend from the Presbyterian Church in America. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about that and your service as a campus minister with Reformed University Fellowship and a minister of the Presbyterian Church in America.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about you, what that means. What does it mean to be a campus minister and ordained minister of the PCA?
Right. So I think I was mentioned to you before we started recording. I actually was christened as a Lutheran, but raised as an Episcopalian, liberal Episcopal church. Got converted through parachurch ministry, Young Life, basically. But then by my senior in high school, heard about a church that taught the Bible more than the church that I was at. It happened to be a PCA, Presbyterian Church in America church. I didn't really know anything about what that meant. But I started going there senior year. Then I went off to college in Boston, where you were happy to just find any kind of Bible-believing church. But by the end of college, I had started wanting to explore some theological questions and started going to used bookstores, which I later learned were kind of graveyards of liberal faddish theology. Not the best way to get a theological education is whatever you happen to find. But I read enough books that I started to figure out what was radical fringe and what was good consensus, even though Reformed books and good solid Lutheran books are harder to find in used bookstores. People tend to pass them down to their friends mm-hmm. rather than cast them off. But eventually, by the time I moved to Nashville after Berklee College of Music, I kind of knew I was Reformed. I knew that the PCA, Presbyterian Church of America, was Reformed, and I moved down there to do music, business stuff, was a recording engineer for a few years, played in a Christian rock band for a few years, had a perm mullet. Those were the days. It was Christian music. It was the 80s, you know, kind of all went together. Yeah. But then eventually that church, Christ Community Church in Franklin, Tennessee, a guy named Scotty Smith was the senior pastor. They wanted to start a college Sunday school class, and me and a few friends had started the Christian Fellowship at Berklee when I was in college, and so I signed up and said, sure, I could help with that. And that's when I first learned about RUF, because Reformed University Fellowship began a chapter at Vanderbilt University. I started hearing from some of my students about it. As a matter of fact, I quoted a book by a guy named J.C. Ryle. And one of my students said, my campus minister told me to read that book. I was like, I want to find out about a campus ministry that sings hymns and preaches real sermons, not a cokes and jokes kind of ministry, as we like to say. And so I was really struck by that, went off to seminary, and then began RUF at Belmont University in 95 when I graduated seminary.
Okay, tell us more about the hymn part of this, because we love hymns here.
Yeah.
How have hymns shaped your ministry? And I mean, this was obviously something that got you into doing the student fellowship.
Yeah, well, even growing up in the Episcopal Church, you know, we had a hymnal. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a different group of hymns than we sang in the Presbyterian churches and some in the Lutheran church too. But I do remember sometimes being bored in church and, you know, looking through the hymnal and, mm-hmm. you know, I think that's actually one of the cool things about having hymnals actually in the pews. When I went to college, didn't really have a lot of interaction with hymns. I was going to different parachurch ministry groups at different colleges, and they were singing a lot of, you know, those kind of worship songs. It wasn't modern worship yet, but it was kind of early worship. This was like mid-80s. But when I went down to Franklin, to Christ Community Church, they were doing some hymns, but a lot of modern songs. But in RUF, they were singing some hymns, some with traditional tunes, particularly if there were folk tunes that you could play on a guitar. You know, I heard Paul Westermeyer. You know, I don't know if y'all know Paul. He's one of the great Lutheran hymn scholars in the world today. Mm-hmm. I heard him give a seminar once on hymn tunes that tend to last more than a generation or two. Mm-hmm. And he said they tend to be based in folk music. Mm-hmm. So we were doing some of those. And then there was a beginning, some attempts at setting old hymn texts to new tunes that could more easily sung in a campus ministry setting, which was kind of like a classroom. So you might have guitars and a cajon. You didn't have a pipe organ or a piano even in most cases. And so that's what we kind of were doing in RUF. And more I found, particularly after seminary, I would meet with students who'd grown up in church, who would often have this experience of wondering whether they really were Christians, And I would sit down with coffee. We'd talk about it, coffee hour, coffee. And I would say, what makes you think that? And they say, well, you know, I'm just really not fired up for Jesus all the time. And I say, okay, that seems like a pretty typical experience of people of faith. If you read the Psalms, they weren't reading the Psalms. They weren't singing the Psalms. In fact, I felt like the more I leaned in, the songs they were singing were shaping them and even lying to them about what the normal Christian life felt like. One of my core convictions, and it's only grown the longer I've been a campus minister, almost 30 years now, is that worship is formative, like it or not. Mm-hmm. And of course, Marva Dawn was on that a long time ago, and I really appreciated the way she articulated that. It named kind of what I was experiencing with students. So I was like, we have got to find some better songs to sing. Songs that are more honest about struggle and more explicit about the gospel. And just, you know, to put a plug in for Lutheran hymns and German hymns, I think the German hymns of the 16th, 17th century and hymns from the Black Church are some of the richest hymns we have on suffering. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we've done some of those over the years, and I'd love to read those as well. If I have one dream, I wish I could have learned German so I could read some of those hymns in the original, but don't think that's going to happen at this point in my life.
And the great point that you made, that the whole Psalter, the Psalms, we just came back from a conference on that, working through the entire Psalter.
It was amazing.
It was, just fantastic to see how the Psalms deal with the reality of the ups and downs, the struggles, the things that we experience as God's children, as Christians in this world.
Yep.
So from that came this idea, from your experience in, of serving students, came this idea for continuing to introduce and reintroduce hymns to your students. And if I recall correctly, that's where Indelible Grace music came from,
That's right, from working with college students. So I just had so many really talented students in Nashville, like the Jars of Clay guys were in our group. They dropped out of college after they got their record deal. And so they were college age. I had Sandra McCracken, who's here from St. Louis, was in our group. All these really talented students. So I started RUF at Belmont in 95. And for about 5 years, we had our Sunday school class as well as our ministry midweek up on campus. And we would do kind of our own music. One of the great things about not being a worship leader at a church is I never got negative pushback like you might when you try to introduce new songs. And why are you retuning the hymns? And honestly, a lot of the songs that we were retuning, we didn't know people were still singing. We were finding them in old hymnals. They weren't singing them at our church. And so, and I, like I said, I had an Anglican Episcopal background. So that was a whole different set of hymns. So we were finding them in these old hymn books. I don't know if you know this, but hymn books before the Civil War are usually just the words, not the words and the music together. Yep. And particularly English hymnody, congregation would sing the whole hymn book to a half dozen tunes. Mm-hmm. And so I would find a hymn like Dear Refuge of My Weary Soul by the British hymn writer Anne Steele, and I hadn't been in a hymn book for 100 years. We don't have a tune. You could sing it to a traditional tune, like if you know a tune for Amazing Grace, Come Thou Fountain, Rock of Ages, you can sing three quarters of the English hymns. Not Lutheran hymns, though, because a lot of them have much more interesting meters. But a lot of these English hymns, you know, that were based more on folk poetic meter. Actually, the English ballad and the English metrical psalm meters are the same. That's why you can sing Gilligan's Island tune with Amazing Grace and things like that. So, you know, I would sometimes bring in one of those texts. It's like, hey, we can sing this to Come Thou Fount, but if somebody wants to write a tune, we can try it next week. And that was part of the great thing about being with college students and with being Belmont students. Half the students are music or music business majors. And so somebody would, and they'd you know, call me and be like, hey, I came up with a new tune. I was like, great, let's try it. And the people were very supportive. I'm not saying every tune we've ever recorded needs to last for years, but we tried to encourage that. And after about 5 years, the group at Auburn made a CD. And I thought, you know, I used to be a recording engineer. I'm in Nashville. I've got lots of great resources. Put a little ad in the church bulletin. Anybody want to let us use their studio? We'd love to make a recording. Put 17 songs on that first record, not thinking we'd get to make another one. But people really resonated with it in remarkable ways. And we sold enough of them to raise enough money to make another one and another one. And now I think we've made 10 or 11. And we've got a new live record coming out end of August, first project I think we've done in about 8 or 9 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah, kind of fun.
The hotbed of just like having all of those resources all at the right place at the right time for you to be able to do all of this work and reintroduce this hymnody.
Yeah. God's providence, right? Yeah.
What is it about hymnody that makes it different from other kinds of music, that you had witnessed in a worship setting? What is it about hymnody?
Yeah. So for me, it was really the text is kind of what I would say is the main thing that was driving what we were doing. We were trying to find a way to sing these texts. Mm-hmm. So like I said, for the most part, there was a lot more honesty about struggle. It wasn't just songs that were telling people what they, or just us telling God what we feel about him, which is appropriate and necessary. And there are examples of that in the Psalms, but we were never hearing about God's heart for us or why. Mm-hmm. So that's the explicit about the gospel piece. And I felt like we really needed those. I was trying to preach on those themes, but then the songs we were singing sometimes were undermining what I was trying to teach the students. And see, in an RUF campus ministry meeting, we don't do the sacraments. And so we don't have that many elements. We have the preaching, we have opening prayer. Some places we'll do a call to worship, maybe a benediction. As part of being an ordained minister on campus, it's a joy to do that. But the songs really have to carry a lot of weight. And so it was worth really attending to them. I think once you understand that worship is formative, then you do attend to the songs and how they're forming your students. And so I think that's a lot of where that came from. I think the fact that RUF uses ordained campus ministers, seminary trained, does change the way we think about some of those things, at least in my experience.
Mm-hmm. Worship being formative. And I would be so bold as to add that it's formative because God's word is mm-hmm. performative.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That God does in his word what he says.
Yes.
And that's, I mean, just the beautiful thing about gathering around God's word is.
Yeah. And I think the good hymns are mediating God's word.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them are born out of meditation on scripture. Mm-hmm. I think of a hymn like How Sweet the Name Jesus Sounds by mm-hmm. John Newton. It's based on Song of Solomon, a little verse. Thy name is like ointment. And I don't know the last time you had a quiet time on that, but what John Newton draws from that is really incredible. Seven verses of the name and healing and all these sorts of things. It's really remarkable. So I think that's one thing I learned. Also, what does it mean to wrestle with God in prayer? That's something I really felt like I'd hear people talk about, didn't really know what it was. But then you read a hymn like Dear Refuge of My Weary Soul, mm-hmm. and there's this wrestling, like she's opening up her heart to us, in some ways laying out her story and inviting us to try it on and see if we might resonate with it. And when my students resonate with the faith of a woman who lived 300 years ago in England, it helps them be reminded the church is bigger than people that talk like us and sing like us. Mm-hmm. And that's really, really helpful, I think. We'd like to use the phrase roots and wings. We want our students to be rooted in a church that's bigger than them and their friends, but also give them wings, invite them to add their voice.
Wow. We're talking with the Reverend Kevin Twitt, Campus Minister for Reformed University Fellowship at Belmont University and a minister of the Presbyterian Church in America. We'll continue the conversation on hymns in just a moment right here on the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
At Concordia University, Wisconsin, we believe you were created for a reason, to use your God-given gifts to help others, to live a life of self-sacrifice in a me-first world, to live a life that's uncommon. Whether you're taking one of 50-plus online programs or learning with us in person on the shores of Lake Michigan, you'll be equipped to make an uncommon impact. Learn more at cuw.edu. Concordia University, Wisconsin. Live uncommon.
Welcome back to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
Today we're talking with the Reverend Kevin Twitt, Campus Minister for Reformed University Fellowship at Belmont University and ordained minister in the Presbyterian Church in America, founder of Indelible Grace Music as well. So hymns have been a key part of your campus ministry with students for some time now.
Mm-hmm.
What do you look for in the hymns that you bring to your students, that you teach your students?
That is a great question. I've gotten to be friends with Keith Getty over the years. Mm-hmm. And recently he came to one of the hymn sings that I've been doing with my son. We call them hymns and stories, where I love to tell background stories interwoven with the hymns. And he said, I think one of the things you really excel at is finding texts. He doesn't always love the tunes that we do, but that's okay. Music's pretty subjective. There's a lot of people that don't like the tunes. I don't even like some of the tunes that we've recorded over the years. But I do work hard at that. And I particularly love to find hymns that have maybe not even ever been used. You know, if you find some, like the collected works, poetic works of somebody like Ann Steele or Henry Light, who wrote Abide With Me, Praise My Soul, the King of Heaven, and Jesus on My Cross. He wrote hundreds of hymns, mm-hmm. some of which have never made it into a hymnal, maybe because there were plenty of hymns on that particular topic in that day, maybe less of those hymns around now. And you go back and search through that. It's kind of like the treasure hunt, which I think has been one of the themes of my life, honestly. And looking through these old hymnals, here's what I do. If the first line really grabs me, then I kind of stop. And particularly if it's saying something in a fresh way, or it's contributing a theme that we have relatively less songs about in sort of the hymnody that we're singing these days. One of the things that's interesting, though, is the relative lack of hymns about the practical caring for our neighbors mm-hmm. and the needs of the poor in hymnody, and what some might call social justice themes. That's kind of interesting. So hymns aren't perfect, and I don't think only singing hymns you'll have actually the fullness of what the Bible would call us to think about and care about. But there are definitely a lot of themes represented in the hymns that are missing from a lot of modern songs. A few years ago, I was part of a study for about a week up at Calvin University with their Institute of Christian Worship, looking at the top 250 modern songs as reported to CCLI over the last 10 years and the top 250 hymns that have been reprinted in American hymnals. So those are two like actual bodies of songs that you can compare for themes. And we were looking at them, particularly with the topic of moral therapeutic deism. And do the modern songs contribute to that? And, you know, scholars are loath to make strong conclusions. They certainly don't help us resist, mm-hmm. right? And for instance, the word sin was never used as a verb. And that's significant, right? I know that in your tradition, as in ours, confession of sin, uh-huh. assurance of pardon is a key part of the liturgy. We do it regularly, even though it's a weird thing. And even when you stand up before students, say, we're going to confess our sin, you got to do a little exegeting even uh-huh. of that. And so it's just fascinating. Again, worship is formative. And so I think that that's a big part. One of the things I'll say, though, when you're trying to introduce things that might be foreign to people, it's really helpful to talk about why you're doing what you're doing. Mm-hmm. It's how people catch a vision. And I think particularly with church music, most people will approach it first and foremost. It's not necessarily their fault. It's the way the culture squeezed us in many ways. They'll approach it as consumers mm-hmm. through the grid of I like this or I don't mm-hmm. like this. And they probably suspect that the song leader or the pastor, whoever they think is choosing the songs, is just picking their personal favorites. You really deflect a lot of that criticism if you say, here's a weird song we're going to sing, and here's why. So I'm telling you, the first month of RUF, because in many ways, RUF, you're planning a church every year yeah. with that freshman class, right? A fourth of your people are moving on, fourth of your leaders, and you've got to constantly be helping new people understand why you're doing what you're doing. I'll pretty much every week for the first month mention, here's why we sing these old songs. Here's why we sing these old hymns. Yeah.
I love going back to old hymnody and finding things that, like you said, are fresh. Mm-hmm. Like that's such an interesting concept that we've lost some of the themes in our hymnody. And yeah. I mean, I've had talks with our chaplain Denzer here too about how that's happened in our Lutheran hymnals as well. That's just, that's such an interesting thing. Talking about introducing hymnody to students who may be unfamiliar with it or introducing older hymnody. Yeah. You mentioned, you know, it's important that they know why they're doing it. Are the students involved in that introduction of the hymnody to new students?
That's actually been one of the cool things. In RUF, we talk about the discipleship process, which I think we stole this from InterVarsity. TDOEE, teach, demonstrate, observe, evaluate, encourage. So we want to teach, but we understand a lot of things are caught rather than just explicitly taught. So I mentioned we had 17 songs on that first Indelible Grace record. I wrote 10 of them. I've not written more than three or four on any of the records since, because the students picked up on the idea and have kind of taken the baton and run with it, which is super exciting to me, particularly because different students will have a different approach. And so it kind of brings some freshness. It's actually hard to write another interesting tune to common meter, long meter, short meter. Yeah. It's actually one of the things I've really appreciated about German hymns, Lutheran and German Reformed, is more interesting meters, which can spark some creativity. And so, yeah, the students have definitely done that. As a matter of fact, what we do, there's a guy, Brian Wren, whose theology I definitely differ from in many, many ways. But he has a book called Praying Twice, based on a supposed saying of Augustine, he who sings prays twice. He talks about the need to sing our songs and other people's songs. So that's the framework we use. In other words, every church has a particular history and a particular cultural place, and we should honor that. That's the incarnation principle, okay? But the church is bigger than people that talk like us and sing like us, and we should give some expression to that. So rather than thinking about blended worship, which I don't really like that term, I think it just leads to sort of trying to please everybody and a mediocrity kind of goal. I like our songs and other people's songs because that's expressing two realities about the church. So the way that practically works out for us at Belmont is we sing four songs each week, two retuned hymns, because that's our tradition. It really came out of our group. And we sing one traditional hymn with a traditional tune, and we sing one modern song. But the longer I have a student involved in leading our worship, the harder it is to get them to do the modern song. And yet, I've got a bunch of freshmen coming in who've only sung, you know, certain modern songs. The weird thing, though, is there's almost no common denominator modern songs. Like if their church sings Hillsong, they maybe don't sing Passion and maybe don't sing Bethel, right? And so, like, there's very few even modern songs that everybody's going to know. So it's just a really interesting thing, the way music and marketing is stratified in so many ways. Huh.
Now, you mentioned a new album. Yeah. At the time of recording this episode, we're waiting for the new album. But now that you get to hear this episode, the new album released on August 23rd.
Yes.
And ready for you to check it out. What goes into preparing for a new album? You mentioned the first album had 17 tracks on it.
Yeah.
That's a lot of tracks on an album.
Well, a live record is different. So this is our second live record.
Okay.
What goes into the normal Indelible Grace records are lots of times where I'll have students come over and we'll just try to break into groups and write tunes for texts. I'm always going through hymnals and finding texts, and then I'll take scan it with my Turbo Scanner app, and I'll Xerox off some copies, and I'll probably have 30 or 40 hymn texts and divide the students up into a few little groups and let them go off into a corner and work on a tune for an hour or two, and then we'll come back together and test them out. And then once we feel like we've gotten a good number of songs, then we'll have a gathering, always with an acoustic guitar. We don't record something if it doesn't work with one acoustic guitar with a group of students in my living room, because we really are trying to do corporate worship music where people can sing together. And then from that, we'll kind of get working on a record. The live record's different, though. The live record that we did, the original one in 2010, called the Hymn Sing Live in Nashville, that was the 10th anniversary of the first Indelible Grace CD. It was during our denominational General Assembly that was in Nashville. And thus the Ryman Auditorium was steps away from where the convention was meeting. So we had the opportunity to do a hymn sing there and recorded it. That was the first record. Similarly, this new record, 2023, was the 50th anniversary of the PCA and of RUF. It actually was our 49th General Assembly because we skipped General Assembly during COVID. Mm. So it didn't quite last, but it was still the 50th anniversary as far as the year went. And so the denomination and RUF together came to me and said, would you put together a hymn sing to honor that? And I thought, sure. The last one we did was 13 years ago. I'm 59 now. We should record this because who knows if we'll get to do another one, certainly in this way. So we recorded it. We've been spending a lot of time kind of editing, tweaking, cleaning up those tracks, mixing it, mastering it, all that kind of stuff. But the songs, we actually, it's titled Bright Hope for Tomorrow. Mm. One of the things we tried to do was not just look back to Indelible Grace of the past, but point the way forward. And one of the things that's happened since that 2010 hymn saying is RUF has expanded to a number of HBCUs, Historic Black Colleges and Universities. Mm-hmm. That's raised all kinds of questions about contextualization. Can we take this idea of old hymns to new music and do it in other musical styles, to which I would say yes. But it's one thing to say yes. You have to actually create culture to shape culture. not just talk about it or talk about why you don't like it. And so at our RUF summer conference for the last 10 years, we've been working hard to sing songs together. So a song like Arise, My Soul, Arise would be a good example if people want to check it out. You can hear the version from the 2010 Hymn Sing record, and then you can hear the way it's evolved, what we call the funky version, or I think we changed it to the gospel version. But it's got horns. We've changed a lot of the chords to reharmonize it. It's awesome. And that's some of the fun that we've been having at summer conference. We wanted to let the rest of the denomination hear it, but also, again, open the door towards what might be coming. We called that concert, actually, from the Bright Hope Tomorrow, the Era concert. You know, Taylor Swift had her Eras tour.
Yes.
Two of my three children went to those. This was, you know, we had people that were involved in the very first record, right, which was came out in 2000. But we also had my son, Cooper, who was in the womb when we made the first record. Mm-hmm. And he sang a couple songs. And a student, Michelle Rayburn, who was still a Belmont student when we did this recording. She's graduated now. So it was super fun to look back over, you know, 25, 30 years almost since we've been singing some of these songs and have all that come together this night, but then really point the way towards where might this movement go next.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds so exciting. I can't wait to check it out. Mm-hmm. Where can we find the new album?
It will be on every streaming platform. Also, we're making a limited number of CDs that you can get from our website, igracemusic.com. But, you know, the music's everywhere.
Yep.
Okay, fun last trivia question to wrap up our time together today.
Okay.
Because we don't have time for the full lightning round,
yeah,
which would be fun.
Right.
But just curious, trivia question for everyone. How many hymnals are in your study?
Oh,
it's a trivia question. Even
it's
you don't
even
know.
The answer.
Well, it depends on how you define hymnal.
I love it.
Five or six bookcases of things related to hymns and hymnody and worship. Technically, hymnals, probably 500 and 750.
Is
but that's
that
because I avoid gospel song books, those little Victorian song books of which there is just a never ending supply.
Yep.
And I also, because I don't read any foreign languages, I don't really deal much with foreign language hymnals because I'm more interested in the text than the tunes.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it would be more. But it's always growing. And the problem now is I've bought all the cheap ones that you can find on eBay. I got to spend real money now when I am going to find one I can add.
Again, you can find more information about Indelible Grace Music at igracemusic.com. Our guest today, the Reverend Kevin DeWitt, Campus Minister, Reformed University Fellowship in Belmont University, and ordained minister in the Presbyterian Church in America. Thank you so much for being our guest today.
Absolutely.
On the Coffee
Thank
Hour.
You.
It was a lot of fun.
Glad to stop by.
You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Eagleseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.